and welcome to Twerpcast, episode 64, Fallcast 2012. The bigger they are, the harder they fallcast. This year, we will be dissecting and predicting the fall 2012 TV schedule. I'd like to introduce you to executive producer of Twerpcast, Jim Caswell. Man most likely to bunghole the entire executive lineup from network TV production in a single night.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, co-executive producer of Twerps, and the man who hasn't seen a show he's liked since Small Wonder went off the air.
She's a small wonder.
As with all of our fall casts, we have a few parameters. We're going to focus in on network TV during the 2012-2013 season. We will be including shows that have been picked up for mid-season replacement already. And we may even touch a little bit on some of the cable network stuff if we decide we have time.
So, Jim, why don't we start with some genre shows? Why don't we talk about science fiction and fantasy?
Okay. First thing that should be said is that sci-fi and fantasy shows are an all-time low number this year than in probably the past 5 or 6 years, at least in the amount of time that we've been doing fallcasts.
We might even say that sci-fi shows are just at an all-time low.
Well, there's that too. The choices for fantasy include ABC's 666 Park Avenue, and I think it could be argued that CBS's mid-season replacement, Do No Harm, probably falls partially on the fantasy side, partially on the science fiction side.
Now, given those two choices in the fantasy genre, Jim, I think it'd be interesting if you would do a compare and contrast with AMC's new 99 Stories. It's a show that's just in development, I understand, but I think it sounds a lot like the 666 Park Avenue.
Well, let's see. You've got a building that seems to have a mind somewhat of its own, capable of doing evil and killing people. I think that says enough right there. 99 Stories takes place in a skyscraper, whereas 666 Park Avenue takes place in a condo complex. But considering the fact that we're just talking about plot overviews, that is an awful lot in common. But then again, last year we had Grimm and Once Upon a Time that had very similar concepts, and they both made it, at least to a second season.
Well, true enough, and AMC has a huge track record of success. They've got Mad Men, they've got The Walking Dead.
Yeah, they've really come into their own as a network. Plus, it's a whole lot easier to be a successful show on a cable network than it is on network TV, because the expected viewership is actually lower.
So, if you get 2 million viewers on AMC, you have a success. If you have 2 million viewers on ABC, you have a cancel.
Yeah, honestly, 666 Park Avenue holds no interest to me whatsoever. The idea of a evil building just doesn't strike me as something that I would enjoy watching. Personally, of the two that we named, Do No Harm actually holds more interest to me. It is a retelling of the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde story, which, while the BBC did do a really good version of it, I think that the spin that they're going to take on it here in America is going to be interesting, as opposed to another BBC remake that we'll talk about later.
Well, when it comes to Jekyll and Hyde, why would you want to do something with Michelle Ryan on it and created by Stephen Moffat?
Because Stephen Moffat won't let them crib from him?
Really? Isn't there another show that we're going to discuss about that?
As a matter of fact, we are. While we said that sci-fi shows are at a minimum, there are still some out there. NBC is going to be airing Revolution, which is the new J.J. Abrams show.
Which, unfortunately, given his most recent track record, doesn't say a lot.
I have to honestly say, I'm looking forward to this J.J. Abrams show. I became a Fringe fan. I like Fringe. Some of his other stuff in the past I haven't been as excited about as you have. But this looks like a really good premise. All of the electronic equipment across the entire globe has stopped working. Mankind has had to resort to more primitive methods of living, and one person has the key to potentially turning the electronics back on. And it's a story about her, this environment, the changes in the world, and it just strikes me as something that has the potential of housing some good stories.
Well, you know, I worship at the house of J.J. Abrams. I've watched every show that he's created in the last decade.
I love his movies. I love the movies he produces. But the last two shows have not made it past their 13 episodes. So his last two television shows were Undercovers, didn't make it past 13 episodes, and Alcatraz, also didn't make it past 13 episodes. Makes me believe Revolution is not going to make it past 13 episodes. I'll be possibly one of three people to watch it, but I don't have high hopes.
Okay, I also watched Undercovers and Alcatraz, and they both suffered from the exact same problem. He took his time building into the storyline. It wasn't until episode 8 or 9 that the behind-the-scenes stuff started to surface. American viewers are not patient enough to sit around and wait until episode 8 or 9 to start getting the questions asked, let alone starting to get them answered. That said, that is a staple of J.J. Abrams' storytelling. I never watched Lost, but there were new questions being asked all the way up until the 5th season. Same thing with Alias. With Fringe, every time a question is answered, 3 new questions pop up. If he sticks to his pattern, yeah, it's probably going to run into problems. But if he can develop a diehard following like he did with Lost, like he did with Fringe, it'll stay on the air. But it means that people have to get attached to it and stick with it.
I think one further problem with his last two television series is they were kind of like J.J. Abrams dumbed down.
Yeah, I can kind of see some of that. The intelligence was starting to seep in about the same time as the in-depth mysteries on Alcatraz, and that could have also been his problem. It started getting too smart for the audience that was watching it.
Well, fortunately, they just stopped.
Probably the show that I'm looking the most forward to on the new lineup is CW's Arrow. Now, keep in mind that I am automatically biased in favor of this show. I love the hero archers. I love Green Arrow. I love Hawkeye. I love Robin Hood. These are some of my favorite characters. So a TV show based on Green Arrow is automatically going to draw my attention. Now keep in mind that just because this is on the CW and is based on a DC superhero, do not assume that this is Smallville Take Two. In fact, the producers are very clear this is going to be a darker show. Within the first 15-20 minutes of the show, the hero is killing people, which is something that Superman never does. It's darker, it's grittier, but it's also on CW. So, you know that it's going to be filled with pretty people and tons of angst. I'm really hoping that this show works, but I'm not going to hold my breath for it.
So far, I agree with everything that you had to say about the show. The producers have gone way out of their way to say this is not Smallville. This is not the actor who played Green Arrow in Smallville. This is not the tone that was set in Smallville. Arrow is to Smallville what Dark Knight was to the Christopher Reeve Superman. I would like it to do well. I think I'm going to go for the 2 out of 2 and say another show that I'm not anticipating seeing next season.
I think that its sole saving grace is going to be the fact that it is on CW. For being a network that is considered a major network, they seem to be happy with cable numbers. It doesn't have to be a breakout success from the very beginning to stay on the CW.
That's probably the sole saving grace of this, is you're right. It doesn't need to make the numbers that an ABC, NBC, or CBS does. Again, talking about tone, I guess they're going to take their cue from Christopher Nolan. That's a positive thing.
And when you're talking about a character like Green Arrow, having it down to earth, down and dirty, gritty, works well. You can't take a character like Superman and make him dark and gritty. It just doesn't work well. But you can take a character like Green Arrow and make him dark and gritty. It almost seems like the more power the character has behind them, the less you can get away with them being dark and gritty, because honestly, if you're going to have a Superman that's dark and gritty, he has no challenge. He can wipe out anybody who crosses his path. He needs to be able to rein himself back and say, no, I'm not going to kill, almost to add to his challenge.
Unless you're just going to completely throw out the Superman story and say, okay, no, Lex Luthor's the good guy, and everybody in Metropolis is out trying to stop Superman, because Superman is of the mindset of, you will obey or I'll rip your arms off.
Yeah, and that's not Superman. Having people who are out to stop a dark and gritty, earth-based character like a Batman, a Green Arrow, works better because, theoretically, they are stoppable, even if they are the heroes.
Well, we could probably do an hour talking about superheroes, but we're here to talk about the fall TV schedule. So what's coming up next in sci-fi and fantasy, Jim?
The last thing that I want to spend any real time talking on in the way of science fiction is an ABC comedy called The Neighbors. The Neighbors has a very distinct place on the fall schedule for me, because when I first heard the premise for the show, I went, oh, I've got to check that out. That sounds like it would be something really funny and right up my alley. The premise is that a couple moves from the city into the suburbs, striving to provide their kids with a more stable environment, get them out of the city into suburban life, only to find out that the gated community that they've moved into is filled with aliens. As a science fiction fan, this sounds right up my alley. Then I saw the preview, and it was horrendous. The acting was horrible. Keep in mind that Doug and I are both fans of camp. This was so campy that it made me want to gag and puke. And it was really kind of disappointing because it does star Jamie Gertz, which I realized that for a lot of people, they would sit there and go, who? Or, oh god, no. But I've seen her in a couple of things that I've enjoyed. I've seen her in more things that I haven't enjoyed, but I've seen her in a few things that I've enjoyed. And that was another one of those things that was in the positive category until I saw the clip and saw just how badly everybody was chewing the scenery and how horrible everything about the clip was. Now, for me, clips are supposed to encourage me to see this show, not drive me away screaming and pulling my hair out.
I have to say, as a concept, the show kind of had an appeal to me, sort of like a reverse Third Rock from the Sun. As opposed to the family coming to town being the aliens, the family is coming to town surrounded by aliens.
Exactly.
Sounds pretty funny.
Yeah. Throw in a little bit of Mork and Mindy in there too, and you've got a couple of really successful science fiction comedies that it's being compared to. I mean, the concept goes back so far as My Favorite Martian.
You know, the duck out of water can be funny.
If done well.
Oh well, hopefully it'll get canceled right away.
If the trailer is an accurate portrayal of the show, I give it 3 episodes and I think I'm being generous.
What really gets me is something we probably talk about every year. During pilot season, a ton of shows are made, and only the cream of the crop get put on air. The fact that this show is the cream of the crop makes me wonder how bad the rest of the dung heap is.
In this case, I think it's not so much that this was the cream as much as people went, oh, Jamie Gertz. It's a name that somebody will recognize and maybe they'll watch it because of her.
Oh, it floats to the top. Well, it's still a piece of...
It's just a well-oxygenated piece of... The last new sci-fi show is Beauty and the Beast.
It's not Smallville, but it does star Kristen Kreuk.
And we will spend some more time talking about it in a future Twerpcast.
In an effort, hopefully, to get it canceled right away. Those are the easiest to pin in the science fiction and fantasy categories. One show, which is arguably a military drama, I think really belongs with the science fiction and fantasy, is The Last Resort.
The show's premise is that a military vessel has been accused of treason and goes on the lam. In the attempt to protect his crew, the captain pulls to port on an island and declares themselves a sovereign nation. The reason that they can get away with this is that their vessel is a ballistic submarine with nuclear weapons aboard. So now this new sovereign nation has nuclear capabilities.
So, it sounds like this falls in the original classification for science fiction as speculative fiction. What if? What if a modern military crew with the ultimate weapon were to separate themselves and say, we're going it alone?
And I would go so far as to say that there's probably going to be a lot of mystery involved in this too. Because the reason that they have gone AWOL is because they had received orders to launch their payload at Pakistan. And it didn't make sense to anybody, why are we launching our payload at Pakistan? So I have a feeling that all of that is going to be wrapped up in this as well. What was really going on behind the scenes? I wouldn't be too surprised if there's governmental political power behind it and a lot of political intrigue and things like that.
So possibly not only does it fall into the science fiction genre, but also into the mystery genre.
Yes. If I didn't know any better, I'd swear that this was done by J.J. Abrams.
It fits perfectly. If you only were to find out that the island was the Lost Island.
And in the end, the nuclear bomb actually goes off, and that's what creates the island in the first place.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
It's a prequel to Lost. Yeah, that's the ticket.
Well, you didn't watch the show, so there really was a nuclear explosion on Lost.
Oh, okay.
Don't ask. Just don't ask.
If you're really that interested, G4 is airing it in repeats right now, or you can always rent it on DVD. So, while that's the new stuff that's coming out in the genre, there are also shows that are returning. Now, before we hit on the returning shows, I feel as though we need to have that arbitrary moment of silence for the shows that didn't make it. There was last year's Kiss of Death, Charlie's Angels, A Gifted Man, Ringer, The Secret Circle, Alcatraz, which we touched on before, Terra Nova, Awake, and Chuck. Now, Chuck, it was anticipated that this was going to be its last year, so it got to finish its story.
Chuck was on the bubble four of its five seasons. That surprised nobody.
The only thing that surprised people was that it made it to a series finale. But Ken was a big fan of it, so it had to have something going for it. I did a little dance when I learned that both Ringer and The Secret Circle got canceled, and it does show that even stuff on CW gets canceled.
How bad do you have to be canceled from the CW?
Apparently, that bad.
Speaking of the Kiss of Death, I really wanted Charlie's Angels to work. I really wanted this show to be great.
Again, it fell into that weird situation where it started hitting its groove about three episodes before it was canceled. You started finding out that there was more going on behind the scenes than just these three hot chicks working for a mystery man. They were starting to develop some secrets and some questions and delving in deeper to provide layers. Problem was that the fates were already sealed by the time they got to that interesting stuff.
Well, we had already done our Torpcast. Too late. That being said, I mean, really, the show was almost universally panned by the critics.
I think we liked it the best.
That's where I was going with it. Maybe I couldn't say I loved it, but I certainly didn't hate the show. It was fun.
I found myself trying to figure out ways to actually tie it in with the previously established Charlie's Angels mythology, because I liked it enough that I wanted it to be part of this grander thing.
If the show had lasted longer, it could have established a long-running history. It just didn't stick around long enough to do that.
Terra Nova, it was by Spielberg. A lot of people thought, oh yeah, this will go far. I think I was calling it this time last year that I didn't think it was going to stick around, so that was no surprise.
This was a show, I think, that really suffered from its own blandness. Before a show produced by Steven Spielberg about people living with dinosaurs, it was just pretty boring. You would think, let's have excitement every week, or even if they're going to Jurassic Park and be chased by velociraptors every single episode, you'd have something to watch.
I didn't watch the show. I didn't think it was going to last long enough for me to bother giving it a chance. But that being said, seeing the reactions of other people who were watching it, they seemed to be really bored with the day-to-day humdrum lives of these people. And like you said, they longed for a good dinosaur chase.
I think you put it perfectly. I mean, I just call it boring, but the show is about the humdrum lives of people living with dinosaurs, and that doesn't sell. I mean, people don't want to watch the humdrum lives of people living in Dallas. They want to see the J.R. Ewing.
So those were the shows that got canceled. The ones that stuck around were Once Upon a Time, Person of Interest, Nikita, Supernatural, again, The Vampire Diaries, again, Fringe is back for one last season, Kiefer Sutherland's latest vehicle, Touch, and Grimm. Now, as I briefly touched on earlier, I was really kind of surprised that both Grimm and Once Upon a Time made it, because on the surface they sound like they have a lot in common. But having watched both shows, they really are two very different approaches to a similar concept.
I don't think they'll make it past season two. A show like Once Upon a Time essentially can't make me care. I've seen the previews and I'm just like, yeah, I can live without that show. And a show like Grimm, which I actually watch, I'll be honest, I can't care. If the show gets canceled after the second episode, it really won't be a loss to me.
Okay, I can agree with that statement. Neither one of these shows are ones that I sit there and I go, oh, I want to watch these episodes again. You know, I want this on DVD. They're just not that high up on my scale. That being said, though, there are nuances of the shows that I do enjoy. I like how Once Upon a Time takes all of these different fairy tales and reworks them and blends them together and gives a different twist on them to work them into the same universe. I like that creativity. With Grimm, I like the creation of the different packs and the idea that each one of these packs has a different fairy tale that can be traced back to it. These are interesting concepts to me. But like you said, if they don't make it past the second year, I'm not going to be writing letters and sending packages of Tabasco sauce in. Not that I did that for Roswell either, but to give you an idea. Or packages of peanuts.
As far as putting all of the fairy tales in the same universe, Bernadette Peters already did this. She was terrific. Oh, Bernadette Peters, I love you. I gotta say, any straight guy that doesn't like musical comedy has never seen To Bernadette Peters. But that being said, Grimm and its Vessen of the Week. I hate that concept of the bad guy of the week. That's just always driven me mad.
Drive?
It's driven me even madder, okay? It's one of the many reasons I couldn't watch Highlander, the series.
Yeah, there are many reasons why not to watch Highlander, the series.
The fact that there should only be one. But we could go into a lot more reasons.
How many times have we ripped on anything non-number one Highlander?
And as hard as it is for me to say this, Ryan Reynolds is going to try and reboot Highlander.
There should have only been one.
Can we do a Twerpcast Kiss of Death for that, Jim?
Oh, most definitely.
Oh, thank God. Hopefully, you folks will never have to actually see the Ryan Reynolds Highlander.
Yeah, we wish that for you. But I think that falls into that same category of wishing for world peace.
I mean, our eyes sat through Highlander the Source, so you didn't have to. They still haven't regenerated. But I digress. Back to Grimm. Other than, like, a few little, like, key moments throughout the series. No play on words intended. They're dropping breadcrumbs throughout the series. I really liked the cop with no name who, like, ate his couch and quarters and paperclips and stuff like that. I was like, that's really clever.
And that's just it, is that beyond the bad guy of the week, there are little nuances about it that I actually like. The fact that he is the first Grimm ever who actually takes the time to get to know these creatures, tries to protect them, tries to help them. As long as they're willing to be upstanding citizens, he believes in protect and serve, just like a cop should. And what I like most is their reaction to this. The idea of, wait, you're Grimm. We're afraid of you. Wait, you're trying to help us? Really? That disbelief.
Those are the far and few between moments in the show. Mostly, it's like, there's a bad guy, must kill him. But the part that, like, really drives me nuts is you must find the bad guy of the week, you must kill him, and then get Monroe to come in and clean up your mess.
And the amount of time that they've been spending trying to show him as learning to become a good Grimm, if he didn't have Monroe watching his back, he wouldn't have made it past episode 3. Above and beyond all of this, though, the biggest problem that I have with Grimm this year is the fact that it's up against two other shows that I'd really like to watch, which is really going to hurt it. It's up against Nikita, and it's up against Fringe.
Oh, son of a... I like all three of those shows! Well, unfortunately, I know Grimm is on demand, so Grimm is going to get watched on demand.
Yeah, it's going to really come down to that. Nikita is on CW. CW is not on demand. Fringe is on Fox, which is on demand, but honestly, I like Fringe better.
Well, Fringe has only got a short season, so when that's over, we can go back to watching Grimm.
If Grimm hasn't been canceled.
True enough.
But the problem here is you've got three genre shows that are all going to pretty much appeal to the same demographic. You're putting all three of them on a Friday night, so you're already chopping your demographic down considerably. Now you're trying to split that demographic between three shows. All three shows are not going to make it. People wonder why, in the day and age of DVRs, why Friday night is still considered the Kiss of Death night. This is why. You take shows that are going to draw to the same demographic, and you try to stretch that demographic this far, something is going to break.
So what you're saying, Jim, if I hear you right, is we have a smaller pool of audience members that all have to split their attention between Nikita, Fringe, and Grimm at the same time in the same night. Obviously, the one that's going to win is Touch, because it's not on at that time.
Yeah, I mean, it's on at a different time. An even better chance is Revelation. It's not on the same time. It's not even on the same day.
Unfortunately, this is the reason why shows like Supernatural, which is on for its 100th year, and The Vampire Diaries get renewed.
That and CW has a very specific demographic, and they play to that demographic. I like Nikita. I thought for sure the way that they changed things up for second season was going to be a kiss of death for it, and it worked. They're changing it up again for the third season. I really hope that it still continues to be successful, but each year it's on the bubble. Move it to a different night so that it won't be on the bubble.
But I don't understand. Hasn't Supernatural been on longer than the age group that CW appeals to?
Now they watch it for nostalgia, and there's always a new batch of 13-year-olds coming along. What scares me is when it's going to be appealing to an age group that wasn't even born when it came on.
Yes, that's when they're going to be making Supernatural, the movie.
Can I vomit now, or should I wait for later?
And, like, Leonardo DiCaprio will be old enough, like, he could play, like, the father figure in the show?
You're just making it worse and worse, you know that, right?
If I knew more about the show, I'd probably come up with... And then you could have the brothers be, like, Shia LaBeouf and Josh Hartnett...
Well, I will say that among the many fantastic things that The Hunger Games has done, up towards the top of that list is decreasing the fan base of Twilight. As that fan base decreases, shows like The Vampire Diaries should go bye-bye soon.
Well, they've already said that the Twilight movies have a different ending than the Twilight books. So what I'm hoping is that everybody dies, and it turns out it was all a dream.
I got one better than the dream. I want Sarah Michelle Gellar to make a special appearance in the film.
Edward, meet Mr. Boyne!
I was doing Supernatural romantic triangles before you were even thought of!
And the funny thing is, Kristen Stewart is really ripping his heart out right now.
So, let's wrap up the genre by highlighting which shows are you looking forward to seeing in the fall.
I'm going to be watching Arrow. I'll be watching Last Resort and Revolution. Nikita, Fringe, Touch, and Grimm, even though Grimm will be on demand.
I'm going to add Do No Harm to that list for the 10 weeks that it'll probably be on. Arrow is a definite. I will continue to watch Once Upon a Time, Nikita, Fringe, and Grimm. Unfortunately, all three of those last ones will be on the same night. So, that covers the genre. But above and beyond how big of twerps we are, we don't only pay attention to one genre.
Even if it is the most important.
And as much as we would like for there to be more fantasy and sci-fi on the new schedule, there is other stuff on there as well. As far as historical dramas go, CBS is releasing a new show called Vegas.
No, not to be confused with Dantana.
It is not a remake of the 70s Vegas. This one is based on the growth of the gambling industry within the city of Las Vegas and is more of a historical piece.
What's funny about that is when I thought it was a remake of the 70s show, I was really looking forward to watching it.
Now you could really care less.
Pretty much.
Yeah. CW, placing one of their mid-season replacements directly in their wheelhouse, is releasing a prequel to Sex and the City called The Carey Diaries.
Oh, jeez, I thought this was going to be a genre show.
You were hoping for girls in prom dresses getting drenched in blood.
Something like that, Jim.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the Carey Diaries we have no interest in. I mean, it's on the CW, not on HBO. You can't even count on it for any good nudity.
Or bad nudity. Kate Beckinsale, good nudity! Kathy Bates, bad nudity! Kim Cattrall, circa 1980.
Good nudity.
Kim Cattrall, circa 2012.
Bad nudity.
Bad. Very bad.
Medical dramas are always a hit. And speaking of hits, there's The Mob Doctor, telling the story of a doctor who works for the mob. Not a big stretch of definition there. Again, on the CW, there's Emily Owens, MD. It's on the CW. It's called Emily Owens, MD. I think I know all that I need to know to say that I'm not going to watch this one. And there's also Chicago Fire.
Aren't they a soccer team?
Honestly, because I live in the Chicagoland area, this should draw my attention. It's a drama about Chicago firefighters. And honestly, dramas about firefighters don't really do anything for me. I never really enjoyed Backdraft. Much like you dislike the villain of the week, these almost feel like fire of the week.
I have to admit, being old, I really liked Emergency 51. That was one of my favorite childhood television shows.
Yeah, I was never even that big of a fan of that one.
And if you really, really like Glee, but you absolutely hate good music, there's a show for you.
Ever since Glee came out, each year they seem to want to release a musical drama. This year's sampling is called Nashville, and revolves around a Nashville star who's on the back end of their career and a rising superstar. Sounds an awful lot like Smash, only set in Tennessee rather than New York. We also have cop and legal dramas. Made in Jersey is...
Snooki!
Going to law school.
Snooki going to law school? What?
It is about a Jersey Shore type woman who has passed the bar and is doing law in New Jersey.
Well, it just shows you how low they set the bar in New Jersey. Apparently, if you can read the label on the morning after pill, you can go to law school.
And obviously, Snooki couldn't do that. The other cop-ish drama is Elementary, and again, much like Beauty and the Beast, we'll cover that one in its own Holmes cast.
Wait, Jim, didn't you say that Stephen Moffat didn't like to be ripped off?
Yeah, and I'll stick to that. Tune in later for more details. And then you've got the never-ending supply of comedies.
And before we get into the list, I have something to ask. Can you explain to me, Jim, why modern comedies are about outrageous situations with people who aren't funny?
No, I can't.
I mean, it seems to me, even if you're not a fan of, say, Seinfeld, the people themselves actually could make you laugh. You could laugh at Seinfeld. You could laugh at Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I mean, you don't have to like the show to laugh at those people. Would you at least agree with me that far?
I will agree that I could see how some people would find them funny, yes.
I've seen every episode of last year's Up All Night. I have yet to laugh.
I would say you're a better man than I, but no, I think you're a worse off man than I.
I like Christina Applegate. I've liked her since Married with Children. She is a very, very talented, funny woman. This show makes no use of her.
Is she essentially a prop?
I wouldn't even go that far. I would say she's a name in the credits.
Wow. And the other star in that is Will Arnett, correct?
Yes. Again, somebody who I personally think is incredibly talented.
See, that's where you and I would disagree, because there's very, very little that I've ever seen him in that even made me crack a smile. That's the reason why I didn't bother to tune in.
Maya Rudolph also makes me laugh. If I were a more forgiving person, I would be attracted to her. She's like 15 degrees off of attractive to me.
As opposed to 15 degrees off cool.
Yes.
I will admit that I spent some time experimenting this year.
And what was his name, Jim?
In comedies. There were a couple of new shows that I gave a try. There was an old show that we've ripped on for years that I finally sat down and watched, and I went, oh my god, this is funny! And I finally found a few comedies that I'm actually able to enjoy. None of them are on this list of new comedies.
And that's where I was going with my question, Jim. It just seems like people say it's a comedy, and then it's supposed to be funny. I get the feeling that this current group of comedies came from the Shakespearean school of funny. If they live, it's a comedy.
Then kill it! Kill it with fire! These comedies are Partners, How to Live with Your Parents for the Rest of Your Life, Family Tools, Ben and Kate, The Mindy Project, Go On, The New Normal, Animal Practice, Guys with Kids, and Malibu Country.
Jim, I have an idea. Rather than talk about what these shows are really about, why don't we make up funny alternates?
That could be fun. Definitely more fun than sitting through any of them.
Yes.
Although I'm going to mark some of these just completely off the list right off the bat, because just their titles are offensive to me.
Guys with Kids. No shows about pedophilia on our airwaves.
How to Live with Your Parents for the Rest of Your Life. In a day and age where people are suffering financial strife because of a downturned economy and they have to do something to live, should we really be making fun of that?
No, and let's face it, it's going to be how to live with the parents for the rest of their lives anyways.
No, because if they're anything like my dad was, and I was trying to create funny situations, he would have killed me. Again, it's no longer a comedy.
Yes. Oh, but there are so many other good choices. Family Tools. It is not a show with Tim Allen in it.
No, that's still on the schedule, but this isn't it. Yeah, Family Tools sounds like it should be on Skinamax.
Exactly. Family Tools are nepotism in the television industry.
I think we can just shorten that title down to just Tools.
Ben and Kate. How about we just shorten that down to Kate and have half hour of Kate Beckinsale in her underwear every week?
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Thank you, Len Weissman, for continually showing us your wife in her underwear.
I thought you were going to change that title to Bend Over Kate.
That is also on the Skinamax network, Jim.
Well, as long as we're retooling all these titles for Skinamax, how about combine the Mindy Project and the one that was following it into one? Go on, the Mindy Project.
As opposed to the world's largest gangbang, this is how many men can Mindy bang.
Which is, of course, the new normal. But you don't want to follow it with the animal practice.
No, no, but it is filmed in Malibu Country.
You're right, that was a whole lot more fun than actually watching the shows. So, that being said, there are a few shows that are returning that I'm really looking forward to. Now, I mean, yes, there's the standard answer of Castle, Bones, CSIs.
Hey, Jim, I thought we were just doing the Skinamax for new shows, but you've got The Big Bang Theory on Two Broke Girls.
Okay, yes, yes. Two of those comedy weaknesses are The Big Bang Theory and Two Broke Girls. Two Broke Girls is a fun little comedy. Big Bang Theory, God, I identify with these guys way too much. And I think that people who are haters on this show, it's probably because they identify with these characters way too much. I am sorry that of the many shows that got canceled, The Finder and CSI Miami was included in that list.
I gotta say, for all the shows that were canceled last year, The Finder is the one that's my biggest loss. That's one that I really, really enjoyed. I thought it was incredibly well written, excellently acted, and just really touched a chord with me. And I will miss it greatly.
Yeah, again, I will go back to the same excuse that I've used multiple times already today. It really started getting into the meat and potatoes of the story too late in the season. The first episode or two, I wasn't overly impressed with because it was different enough from Bones that I sat there and went, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to like this. But once it started creating an identity of its own, I really started liking this.
To reiterate something that we have said earlier, the show started with Find the Object of the Week. And then as time developed, as the show was getting into the meat and potatoes, that's when we started to learn who was the Finder. Who was Leo? Who was Willa? Willa was more than just a gypsy thief. There was subtlety to each of these characters, and there was depth to them that was being brought out over the course of the 13 episodes that you knew that Walter was the Finder. So you had to establish the fact that Walter found things and he made weird associative connections. That was kind of like the humor. And once you established that he could find anything, and it wasn't necessarily what you thought you were looking for, then you could go tell the tale of everybody who helps him on his way.
Yeah, that show ended up ending on a cliffhanger, and not being able to see the resolution to that cliffhanger is going to be one of my big regrets of the 2011-2012 season. So, normally at this point, we would be asking, what shows do we think are going to have an incredibly short lifespan? I will answer that by saying, we're going to feature Beauty and the Beast and Elementary in their own podcasts.
Ooh, the Kiss of Death!
Beyond those, yeah, there are some that I really hope don't even make it three.
You know, it doesn't have to be even hoping they make three. I think The Last Resort is a really cool concept. I can't imagine anybody watching it.
It depends on how many gunfights, missile fights, things like that, that get incorporated into the show. If they can actually hold some of the action, I think it could actually work. As I said earlier, I hope and pray that The Neighbors crashes and burns like one of Last Resort's nuclear missiles.
I don't think Do No Harm is going to do very well. The concept of a modern-day Jekyll and Hyde, pretty interesting. I mean, again, something that appeals to me. I don't think people are going to watch it.
With the exception of Arrow, pretty much anything on the CW can crash and burn as far as I'm concerned.
I think the whole CW should crash and burn. But I have a feeling a show like The Carrie Diaries is actually going to make it.
Unfortunately, I think you're right. Which just goes to show that, yes, society has degraded that far.
Which makes me want to go on Sci-Fi Channel and do the actual Carrie Diaries. Or better yet, Showtime or HBO.
Where you can really gore it up.
Yes.
And, well, I think the reason why so many comedies were listed on the new list is because so many comedies didn't make it last year. And, well, here's hoping that there's a trend.
I can't imagine any of them going on, but in this case, there are enough of them that, you know, just throw a dart at the list and something's going to stick.
Oh, you mean the way that network executives pick shows?
Yes, that's what I mean.
I guess that I'll end this by saying, please don't just turn on the TV and walk out of the room. While the Nielsen ratings aren't anywhere near as accurate as they used to be, show some discernment on what you watch. If there's nothing on that you really enjoy, the TV does have an off button.
I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think Nielsen has ever been accurate. I mean, they've already proven that if Nielsen had been available during the Star Trek era, Star Trek would have been the number one show on television in its demographic. That being said, I'm not going to hold grudge over a show that was made before I was born. But to go further, just don't turn on the television. Go read something. Read Asimov. Read Heinlein.
Please, for the love of God, do not read Stephanie Meyer.
However, if you would like to do a book burning for Stephanie Meyer, I'm sure we could get U.S. Cellular Park to allow that. And if you'd like to read young adult fiction, try Suzanne Collins.
In other words, good literature.
As always, we thank you for listening to TwerpCast. We encourage your feedback. Please write jim@twerponline.net. And also, remember, we can be found on Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
TwerpCast has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2012. Thanks for listening, everybody.
NBC.